Hello, 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 and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey, girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Good. How's it going? How's the finger?
Oh, it's healing a little bit. You can see where I burnt it across here.
Oh, yeah.
On my middle finger.
Yeah, what did you do? Tell our listeners what you did.
So, for episode 43, just to let you guys know, I was cooking breakfast with Dion the other day, and of course, I was bitching that the man didn't know how to fry potatoes, and yeah, I got myself a grease burn because I was putting some potatoes in, not paying attention, and my fingers went in a little too close, and the grease bubble popped right on my fingers. And so I was dropping it, and I was like, oh, my God. I started screaming, running right for the water. I'm yelling at Dion, go get my sour cream. Mm-hmm. And then so he brings the jar over, and he's trying to, like, scoop some out. I'm like, fuck it. I put my whole hand in the whole jar of sour cream. Didn't fucking care because it hurt so bad. So bad. So... yeah, for those of you who don't know, sour cream, cottage cheese, any milk products helps with burns better than water does.
Okay.
It prevents the blistering, the swelling, and it also helps to cool the burn better than water does.
Nice. Well, it looks really good.
Yeah, well, considering it probably was a second-degree burn, I mean, that's...
yeah.
I mean...
it looks really good. That's why I don't fry anything in our house.
But I love my fried food.
Yeah, well, I'm not in charge of frying. We do fry stuff here, but I'm just... oh. I don't. It's too fucking dangerous. I don't need shit flying at my face.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of bad. I was like, motherfucker. And it hurt for hours.
Ooh, I bet. Hours. That, like, stinging, throbbing feeling.
And it finally, like I said, I put a whole bunch of sour cream on my fingers and left it on there and let it dry on there. And it, like, helped the heat.
Oh, cool.
Like to really... because it's like your finger's still cooking afterwards.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the crazy old lady that I saw? Well, she wasn't old at that time. She was probably what my age now. But it was about 15 years ago. We were at a 4th of July party, and one of the kids burnt their hand on a sparkler. And so she goes into her purse and pulls out holy water. And she's going to put holy water on it. And one of the other moms grabbed his fucking hand and was like, come over here. And brought him into the kitchen and was like cursing under her mouth about the fucking holy water.
You know, hey, it might have worked.
I don't think it was working.
Everybody thought I was crazy about the sour cream thing, right? Everyone thinks I'm crazy when I talk about it. So I had a friend of the family. She went out to the beach, came back. She was all burnt. I was like... and she's all sore and couldn't move, right? Because you know how that feels. I was like, come on. I was like, let's put some sour cream on you. She's like, what? I said, trust me, it works. I promise. So I put some sour cream on her face, and she did it. In the morning, it helped. She goes, but damn. She's like, I kept dreaming about tacos all night long.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Now, did you expect me to say something in rebuttal to the sour cream? Did you think?
No.
Yeah, because I've never heard of it, but I just assumed you knew more about it than me.
But a lot of people, like, so I have a history of having good home remedies and then having some really bad home remedies.
What are your bad ones?
Okay, so when Dion and I relatively first got together, I read an article that putting onions on your feet when you're sick will suck the sickness out of your body.
Oh my God.
So I had this man putting sliced onions in his feet, in his socks, and sleeping with it.
Gross.
It didn't work.
No, and I can't imagine what food you were dreaming of smelling onions in your bed the whole time.
Right. Yeah, no, we totally did that. But then there was that one that was the epic fail, pretty much. Sour cream was basically the only one that's...
really worked.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of avocados?
For what?
For sunburns?
No.
So I hadn't either, and stop me if I've shared this story before, but when I first met our friend Jen about 7 years ago, my best friend Jamie had come into town, and we went out to our neighborhood pool about 6:30 in the evening, 7 o'clock in the evening, for 2 hours, hour and a half. Get back to our house, and Jamie is completely burnt.
How?
That quickly. Well, I mean, just because she's white. Yeah, well, yeah, she's Ohio white, like white. Yeah,
this is true.
Right. So in an hour and a half, completely burnt, day one of spring break. And so we're like, fuck, we got to go get you some aloe or something. And so, and like that, by that time in March, I don't have fucking aloe or anything. I mean, we're not going to get our good burns until June, July, you know?
Right.
So
our good burns.
Yeah. So we go to Publix and she's walking around like a zombie with her arms out because her whole body hurts to touch. And this guy stops us and is like, hey, you know, go grab some avocados. And we're like, excuse me. And he was like, avocados, if you smash it onto your skin, it will help.
Okay.
So we're like, all right. And he was like, they just have to be ripe. So we get over to the bin of avocados and we're like, well, how do we know if it's ripe? I mean, I've never cooked with a fucking avocado before. How am I supposed to know? Wait.
The Filipino girl has never cooked with an avocado.
There's no avocados growing in the Philippines. So I don't know. And I've never made fresh guacamole or anything at that point. So I'm like, I don't know. Jamie definitely doesn't know. They're not eating fucking avocados in Ohio.
But Jen's there.
No, so Jen's not there. So I call Jen.
Oh, okay.
I phone a Mexican. I'm like, hey, Jen.
Oh, my gosh.
How do I know if an avocado is ripe? And she's like, I don't know. She was like, how am I supposed to know? And I was like, I don't know. I just thought you'd know. And then her ex at the time goes, wait a second. Did she just call you and ask you about an avocado because you're Mexican? And I was like, duh. I mean, yeah. Who else would I call?
Right.
And Jen was like, well, let me tell you, I'm brown on the outside, but white in the inside. My mom calls me her little coconut. I am no longer your phone a Mexican friend. You're going to need a new one. So that was my first introduction into Jen being a coconut, how I learned about ripe avocados. And by the way, it did not work. Jamie was sunburnt uncomfortably the rest of the 5 days.
Oh, you should have put some sour cream on her and you could have just like ate tacos right off of her.
I'm not doing that. Are you, speaking of eating food off of people, are you into those sushi, you know, when they put like supermodels on the table and they serve sushi off their body? Gross?
No, I'm not into gross.
Or art?
Well, not the sushi part because I like the sushi, but I don't want to eat my food off of a stranger.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It is, just because I don't know where all of that's been.
Yeah, I don't care how clean her body is. I think that it'd be neat to maybe see. But can we put the sushi on the table?
So we don't have to eat off of her?
Right, yeah, that part's kind of gross. What if she's got Victoria's Secret lotion I can taste on it or something?
Yeah, it's...
I'm not into it. The Desperate or Real Housewives, they've like sprinkled it in a few episodes where they've had it as a centerpiece and it's super fancy, but I think it's super disgusting.
Well, that's old, okay? Because that's what they used to do at Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah. I think that's where it started from, actually.
Right. So that's not the new.
No, it's not. But I think you're right. I think it started from Sex and the City. Oh, speaking of my little coconut, here, come on in. Hold on. We're going to have...
Are we having a guest?
Yeah, surprise guest. I was just say hi, Tabby, to Jen. Here, you're gonna have to listen in here.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good. I'm good.
I just shared the avocado story because Tabby had
you're
a really
our little coconut.
I know. Yeah.
I said that's the day I learned about coconuts don't avocados don't work. And Jen informed me she was a coconut and could not be my phone a friend Mexican.
Yep. If you look at any of my Facebook pictures, my mom always says, oh, my little coconut. You say I'm brown on the outside, but white on the inside.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for stopping by. Jen picked me up some mirrors from my bathroom rehab.
Oh, nice.
So she was dropping him off. She's on her way down for a date day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm jealous. No date over here.
Yeah,
no date. It was nice seeing you. And nice seeing everybody.
It was good seeing you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Hey, thank you. I'll see you later. Hey, let me see those nails. Ooh, did you show Lorelai? She got 4th of July nails.
Oh, did she?
Yeah,
nice.
Lorelai was recommending it to her.
Did you see Doreen's comment on my Facebook post when I posted the picture? She's like, good thing your nails aren't clean. Otherwise, Sabrina.
I would have been like, ooh, man, too bad you got burned, but your nails look like shit.
Right, and, you know, mainly I don't wear nail polish anymore.
No, but your nails looked well manicured either way.
They're not.
Well, I mean, they're not painted, but they look good.
Yeah, because they're just solid, but, I mean, they're not well manicured.
Yeah, they
file them down every now and then, or they just grow pretty even until they get too long. Then I have to bite them off, and then I just file down that little bit.
Well, you're a farmer now anyways, like a full-fledged. That's why I sent you that video yesterday of Nikki Fresh.
Oh,
did
my
you
God.
See
what,
that?
What the hell? Like, Sabrina, so, I was, like, expecting something really cool and, like, so I started looking it up, and I'm going, the fuck did she send me? I'm like, is this some housewife bullshit, like, you know, reality TV? And then I listened to that song she was singing, and I went, oh, no. I'm like, God, I'm like, reminding myself, I love Sabrina.
Well, I saw the ad on Facebook as I was scrolling, and I was a little curious, and I was like, oh, Nicole Richie has a new reality show. This is weird. And then you click on it and it's like a parody of a reality show of, and I watched the interview with Jimmy Fallon yesterday where she said, you know, that she went to her husband. She's married to one of the brothers of Good Charlotte, I think, Joel Madden, and went to him and was like, hey, what do you think about if I rapped about gardening and harvesting and all this stuff, because she said that she started gardening about 5 years ago. She's about your age, started gardening about 5 years ago, and then started sharing her harvest because that's what Oprah did on Oprah's Instagram. And she was like, if Oprah's doing it, I'm doing it. And then people started making fun of her and saying, like her friends, like, oh, you're such an old lady and only old ladies garden. And just like me, right? Like, are you going to get your overalls, Tabby? Are we doing the straw hat? And right. Then she was like, wait a second, when did harvesting and gardening and growing your own vegetables and providing for your family become uncool? She was like, yeah. I actually think it's super cool. So yeah. Then she made an appointment at her husband's office with his twin brother and sat down and was like, I want to become a rap artist and rap about gardening. And they were like, get the fuck out of here. And so they recreated that whole real life conversation because, you know, as a husband, he's taking it as like, I told my neighbors I wanted to become a next K-pop superstar. Taking it as that, like, okay. So she created this show where she's a fake rapper called Nikki Fresh. And all of her rap songs are about gardening and harvesting and honeybees. And so if you listen to it, it sounds like a rap song, but it's just, it kind of reminds me of that one guy that was saying like Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
Where he did like parodies of different songs.
Right. And like for me, she was just saying words in a rap tone. And I'm like, you don't make any fucking sense.
No, if you listen to it, it'll actually make sense to you because you're a gardener. Like when it starts talking about, like it talks about compost heaps and all this stuff. And I was like, what the fuck? You can't even tell because she's rapping it out.
Oh no, I knew what she was saying, but it wasn't informative. It was just all these random gardening topics she was rapping.
Yeah, she's got, I guess at the end of every episode, there's a music video and rap song, trap rap, or parent trap is what she's referred to it as, because she doesn't want to disrespect trap rap. So I think we should start calling you Tabby Fresh.
Tabby Fresh. All
that's
right.
Your rap name.
That's my rap name.
Right.
Wow.
Tabby Fresh with a dollar sign for the S.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tabby Fresh. All right. Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. So that's how I came across that thing. So
Maybe that's what I'll call my name, my bread baking company.
Yeah, see?
There we go.
There you go.
Happy fresh.
Nice. So, how are you guys celebrating the 4th? We've got the 4th of July coming up. What are you doing?
We are not doing a damn thing. That's how we're celebrating.
Yeah.
Kids are going with their father. So they are going to have a nice weekend out there. It's actually supposed to be rainy and crappy weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I told Dion, I said, we need some adult time, but we also need some couple time.
Yeah.
So, and so of course he agreed, and we're just not going to do anything but just kind of hang out with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Very low key. We're not having our annual party like we normally do. And kind of just looking forward to some downtime.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. What about you? What are you guys doing?
We're, you know, staying local. If your annual party is canceled, then we're not doing anything. So we are just staying local. We'll be out on the boat Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
Friday, there is a firework display at our local baseball team. Minor league team is doing like a movie and fireworks. They're limiting it to 2,000 people, and you have to pre-buy the seats because they're spacing people out. I'm just a little concerned about going somewhere with 2,000 people.
Yeah. Because it's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's, well, first of all, it's way more than we've been exposed to since February, right? Even though they're separating everybody out in their seats, what about the bathroom, concessions, all of that?
Right, walking in the door.
Yeah, filing in the line. Now, as of Monday, Jacksonville has mandatory mask in any public areas. So this place is, if you're in your seat, you can take your mask off. But in line and in the bathrooms and in concession stand lines, we're going to be wearing fucking mask, and it's 98 degrees out. Again, that doesn't sound.
No, that is actually quite dangerous. So yeah, I know I told my story on here about wearing the mask, but I've also seen videos where somebody takes an oxygen measurer.
Oh, yeah. Smart.
Right. And does it before he takes the mask. It comes out with a number. And then he does it with the mask on. And the amount of oxygen that's reduced by wearing a mask by this machine, which is like, I know I'm going to say it wrong, but it's like FDA. It's something that they use professionally. Right? Yeah. Gets so low that the thing starts screaming and beeping and flashing red because you're not getting enough oxygen because of the mask and that you're putting your body in harm's way.
Yeah, and you're just breathing in this old, stale air rather than fresh air. And, right. You know, if we thought the ozone layer was an issue and the contamination of air pollution, well, then why don't you just force us to breathe our own air in and out over and over again?
Right, like China does.
Yeah.
Which they're trying, that feels like what they're trying to do. I mean, it's just, you're going to make yourself sicker by wearing the damn mask.
Yeah. I feel like, at least in our city, that they didn't want to do it. Like, we were the last major city in Florida to do it. That our governor doesn't want to do it, but these stupid numbers keep going up that then he feels forced to do something. Because then you have the public outcry of, well, why aren't you forcing people to wear masks? You know, what are you doing to stop it? And then you have that other half going, well, we want to do what we fucking want to do, and we don't want to wear a mask. And so it's craziness.
So I don't know if you saw this because I didn't send it to you, but I saw an article where I think 5 people in Palm Beach County are suing the county for mandating masks.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so basically saying it's unconstitutional, it's illegal, you can't mandate it, sort of thing. And so they're going on to court. I don't know what the outcome is. They don't know, but 5 people are suing the county for it.
Well, that's an interesting twist. And it reminds me of the twist that I sent you for St. Augustine. So in the middle of the courtyard in St. Augustine, right across from the Bridge of Lions or Bridge of Lions, is an old Civil War statue of actual people that died in the Civil War that were Civil War soldiers. And the city had voted to remove it.
Okay.
And now 38 descendants of those Civil War soldiers are suing the city to preserve the monument and not remove it. That was the first that I've seen of a family actually sue now because of removing
a statue.
Yeah. So that why, and I, that's what I text you. I was like, ooh, this is a new twist. Like what?
Right.
What are the laws and the rights? And because that's what all this comes down to, right? We have a lot of feelings, but in this country, we have a lot of laws. And
yes,
and
do.
That's what it's going to come down to is what is the law and what is there in place to protect it? Maybe we don't have the right to just be removing these things. Maybe there is a law that's protecting them that we're not aware of.
Correct. And also, we also have to remember that not necessarily every statue was put up there by public funds.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Right.
I mean, if this family or these families spent their money and fundraised or whatever and purchased this statue,
right,
technically you're taking down private property.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. That makes me think of then the Monument Memorial Park here in Jax that they took it down. And I think I mentioned it last time. The family was not happy about it, but I know originally they paid for that monument and then the park was named after him. So,
right, but the monument itself was,
yeah, it
private
was purchased.
Property.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah.
That would be something to battle out in court.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting plot twist to
it
to all these things.
Especially since I think it was like 3 or 4 episodes we had talked about the coming down of statues and you were like, it's not like the people, these families of these statues were coming out. Right?
Yeah.
And now they are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. Because I mean, that was my argument is, you know, who's actually going to visit? Well, there are families and history attached to it. It's just so fucking murky where it's like, I don't know.
It's,
I don't know.
Like we said, it's beyond the statue. It's beyond what they're claiming it's about. It's just about removing and destroying at this point.
Well, I do think that there is a very large group of people that are very upset about these statues and they don't want a daily reminder of slavery and the things that their ancestors had to go through. I'm not trying to play, not, you know, consider that side of it. But I think it is an interesting twist that you now have the relatives of these soldiers suing the city for removing it, which is,
mm-hmm,
again, it becomes take out the feeling side and what's the law say?
Right, exactly. Because if the feeling side went and tried to sue the city for displaying something that was racist and went through a legal matter of it, we might be having a different conversation.
Yeah.
But they didn't take a legal, they didn't take the legal path. They went and vandalized and destroyed and removed it.
Right.
So you kind of have to, you one side's all feelings and it feels like one side is, you know, legal,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I understand not wanting to have those certain statues there, but you got to go about it the right way. We don't need to just, we don't get to have a tantrum and destroy stuff just because you don't like it.
Yeah, I think the vandalizing of any of them should be against the law and I look down upon. There's no reason to vandalize and spray paint any of these monuments. Now, you can demand for them to be removed. Our city removed one in the middle of the night just to avoid confrontation, I think. Fine. If you're going to remove it and preserve it for a final decision later to protect it or whatever the purpose was, then that's fine. But for people to go around and they're just spray painting these, and our city, our country's so young, we don't have a lot of these, right? We don't have a lot of history and you just can't go and start destroying all of them. Do we need them in our parks in these cities where, you know, a lot of times these fucking statues are in underprivileged communities anyways. They're in these parks surrounded by Black people that don't want to stare at a Civil War soldier that was fighting to enslave them. Well, great. Go put them in a museum somewhere. But let's not spray paint them and deface them and destroy them in that process.
Correct. And understand and make sure you know why that statue is there, right? Mm-hmm. So like the statue you had mentioned a couple episodes ago where it was a soldier but who fought the Civil War, but that was not there
right.
for his work in the Civil War. It was there for the work he had done to liberate slaves.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So know what you're fucking doing before you do it. Don't go, oh, there's a fucking white man as a statue and I just want to tear it down.
Yeah, I agree. So it'll be interesting. We've got these, now the five people in Palm Beach, the 38 descendants here in St. Augustine. It'll be interesting to see how all of that plays out. Quickly, before we get to Miss Betty Boop over here, I wanted to mention the LA proposal. So now we see that police departments are, you know, they've requested defunding, and where some people believe defunding to be actual funds and money to be reallocated from the police department to minority groups or programs or something like that. LA has proposed slashing law enforcement budget, and in the programs that they've requested to remove the funds from include, but are not limited to, gang reinforcement. Not sure if LA is the best place to do that.
No.
And then the Special Victims Unit, which the Special Victims Unit is in charge of sexual, physical assault or abuse of children or women and rape.
Right. It also was fraud and cyber crimes. There was reducing custody operations and mental health evaluation teams. And it would be a total of $145.4 million that would be cut. Now, mind you, at the exact same time, LA has released over 5,000 inmates due to coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this city has released criminals, and now they're removing programs and money from their police department. Found out that there's going to be 400 layoffs from it, and 95 million, there's 9.5 million people in their county alone. And the mayor of LA, Eric Gareth, said he pledged to redistribute some funds from the police to the Black communities.
Yeah, which is the idea of defunding the police.
Right.
To me, it removing money from the SVU department, and this is what I said to you, it feels like an attack of women. The moment that department is banished or dissolved or whatever it might be, it's a free-for-all on women and children again.
Absolutely, because you're surrounded by criminals. There's no police to protect you, and I don't know what California gun laws are, but I could only imagine they're absolutely fucking ridiculous because it's a democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have women and children and good people who cannot defend themselves against the criminals, and there's no police.
Right. And they're, you know, being a member of SVU, and I will say that most of my knowledge comes from Law and Order SVU episodes. But it's, my concern is that, you know, it takes a special kind of investigator to understand the mental health and the behavior of somebody who's been sexually assaulted or physically assaulted, to understand the mind of a child who has been physically, mentally, and sexually assaulted. And if you're just handing that to everyday detectives,
there's going to be more damage.
Yeah.
Not purposely. But just because you haven't been trained in this particular area, which I find this is actually very hypocritical considering this area demographic of people, especially California, are always like, oh, well, let's let the social workers go out and, go to a mental challenge call, right?
Right.
Right. But now they're getting rid of them out of their police department. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's concerning to me that in order to provide more, it's not necessarily required to take less, to to provide less on the other side, right? Let's look at Corona, for example, and the amount of money all of a sudden our school board was able to come up with, this department was able to come up with that. Where'd that fucking money come from? Rather than remove programs, let's just add some on. I'm not saying these Black communities don't need assistance. I'm not saying that further education for police officers aren't required, that there's more money to spend there to make things better. What I'm saying is if you start taking away, and for me, it's like, all right, well, who cares about women? It's like a 20-year jump
back
into the past and punches me right in the fucking gut.
And then the thing that is, but there are women in children and in these Black communities.
Yeah, right. And minority children and women are, yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't make
it's concerning
any sense. Look, California is going to set itself on fire. Oh, and I believe there is a county in California, and I read an article, and I can't remember all the way, but basically they were defunding the police, but while the local government was spending $63,000 of budgeted money to provide themselves with private security. They're taking away the police from the citizens and then buying their own security. What does that tell you?
Right.
I mean, they don't trust the police that's there, and now they're going to cut it even more. And they're like, yeah, we're going to need some private security over here because shit's about to get bad, but I don't want it over here. And, you know, that's the other thing about L.A. Let's be really fucking honest. L.A.'s got two demographics, fucking wealthy or poor.
There's no middle class.
No middle class. So guess who's not going to get affected by this? And who is?
The rich.
Right.
Right. Right.
And I think it's interesting that they're getting rid of fraud and cyber crimes.
When cyber is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
On even the smallest businesses to personal attacks to anything. I got a message the other day with one of my passwords as the subject line. Mm-hmm. That says that they used my camera to videotape me pleasing myself and that they had a copy. And if I did not pay money, that they would release it. Well, first of all, I've never pleased myself in front of my webcam. So nice try. Second of all, I don't give a fuck. You want to put it out there? Great. I look fucking great. What are people going to say that they don't do it either?
Right.
Give me a break.
I'm a grown-ass woman who masturbates.
Right. As long as I'm not doing something weird over here, you don't see me licking my toes in the video or messing with my dog. Who gives a shit?
Right.
But people, that tactic works because there's somebody who did that is now like, fuck.
Right.
I better pay them $250.
Well, especially if it's someone who is in a like a public position. Right in the eye, and that would get put out because that would that would damage their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
but cyber crimes,
I'm surprised about cyber.
Yeah, that really, by getting rid of that, it really opens up for a lot more monetary crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the lower communities will suffer more of a physical violent crimes, where the rich are going to suffer more of a financial crimes.
Yeah, well, good. They got plenty of fucking money then. I'd be interested to see again how this plays out. This is just one of the budget suggestions for a one city's police department.
Right.
It's scary, though, to see it. It's scary to see who they find is easy to write off. And it does not surprise me that it's women and children.
Right. And just to let, this is Nancy Pelosi's state.
Fuck her.
This is the shit that's happening in California. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah. California has always kind of been wilding out. And same thing with Washington, Oregon, all of those very far west states. There's just too much granola and a ton of fucking money.
Right.
And I think this is terrible of me, but they kind of remind me of what the true Democrat was like in the 80s and 90s. You really kind of imagine this hippie lover, go loose-minded mm-hmm. kind of person. And it's like they've taken that and gone to extreme where I find a today Democrat to be, you know, somebody just a little more open-minded than a conservative that is it necessarily doesn't isn't a hippie, you know, but I don't know.
See, I wouldn't associate hippies with this because hippies were all inclusive and love everybody. This isn't loving everybody. This is fucking putting everybody in danger.
It is. It is. You're right. Yeah. So we'll see how all of that goes. I who knows? So let's jump over to what I'm most excited to talk about, which is Betty Broderick.
Yes.
Broderick.
Yeah. However you say that fucking name.
I know. So I'm watching the show Dirty John's The Betty Broderick Story on USA, which is a miniseries with Christian Slater and Amanda Peet playing the two main characters. It's been a great freaking show.
Okay.
You weren't able to watch the show, but you've done independent research.
Yes.
Since you have more of the facts, why don't you share the facts of what happened?
Okay. So Betty Broderick, she was married to Dan Broderick in 1969. They had four children, and she always wanted a husband and a family. She was trained to be a housewife from a young age. She comes from a very strong Catholic family. Her mother was Italian, and her father was Irish, or that's opposite, but Italian, Irish, Catholic family. And she was told from a young age, go to Catholic school, be careful when dating until you find a Catholic man, support him while he works, be blessed in your later years with beautiful grandchildren. So she was taught from her parents' era, which was in the 50s, that you marry, you support your husband, you have children, and you live a happy life. That's it. There's nothing mm-hmm. else outside of that. And considering the time frame that her parents were in, that was what you were supposed to do. And that was an actual possibility, right?
Right. There weren't working house, working women at that point. The men were the main providers during
Correct.
This time period.
And most men were happy to stay committed and be those providers.
Right.
Right. When she returned from her honeymoon with him, she came back pregnant. That sure as hell didn't mm-hmm. take long, did it? So she met Dan at Notre Dame. She did not go to Notre Dame. He was only there. He ended up going to Cornwall, which is in New York, which is where she was living. And then he decided that he was going to go to law school at Harvard after he finished his medical degree. So yeah. Betty was the main provider for him while he attended Harvard with the help of a student loan. So they were married for 16 years. They had four children. And then everything started to go a little downhill. Betty accused Dan of having an affair in 1982. She started getting angry. They started having fights. They were physical fights. The children were overhearing them. Dan subjected his wife to gaslighting, which is basically telling Betty that she was crazy. She had lost her mind. He's not cheating.
Right.
Now, mind you, at the exact same time, he hired, what was her name, Linda?
Yeah, Linda.
Linda as a legal assistant. Linda has no legal expertise. She was a freaking stewardess.
Yeah.
Okay. Got hired. She is 17 years younger than Dan.
Right.
So Betty got very angry. So she started becoming violent. Where was it? And then at that point, they started filing for divorce. And was that in 89? I think that was 89. Oh, they filed for her to divorce in 1985. So mm-hmm. Betty accused Dan of affair in 1982. They started getting angry. Dan had Betty committed to a mental institution, had her banned from her children and home, and she continued to leave him angry messages and then vandalized the home. They filed for a divorce in 1985. It took 4 years to finalize the divorce, and it was considered the worst divorce case in San Diego. Look, another California. He was able to withhold alimony payments, sold the house without her permission, and then I asked, was her name on the deed? And then he also won sole custody of the kids. So
let me point out, things that you had said. Yes, she was raised by a very religious family. In part of the show, it shows like for her birthday, she would get another piece of a china set or another piece of a silverware set, because like that's what she had to look forward to. And she had been given that her entire life as a child.
That's why she was so pissed when the woman wouldn't give back her wedding china.
Right. Like it was a big deal to this is a family set and all this stuff. So I don't think she went to school, but she did provide for him. So
she went to Mount St. Vincent in the Bronx. She did go to school. Okay. She got a degree in education and minored in English.
Oh, that's right. Because afterwards she always tried to get a job back at schooling in school. So during the time that Dan, so when she met him, he was in law or in medical school. He wanted to become a medical professional. So she marries him. She ends up pregnant right away because he will not allow her on birth control. She not only had 4 live births, she had 2 abortions and 3 miscarriages. So she was pregnant over 16 years, 9 times.
Wow.
And it was because Dan would not allow her to go on birth control. Like every time she became pregnant, there was more sadness in her eyes because they struggled. They were fucking poor while he was in medical school and law school. He did not work because, come on, Betty, you know, I would love to work, but I really just need to concentrate. And I don't, you know, if I can just get to this point and provide for our family. And she would go, no, I don't want you to work. Don't worry. I can raise these 3 kids and sell Tupperware on the side and work these hours and do this. So the first 8 years of their marriage, it was Betty providing for that family. It was Betty providing for the kids, providing for him. He gets his medical degree, needs a new doctor jacket. Fine. I do the same thing, right? Yes, we're struggling, but we'll spend $300 on a tailored jacket, which back in 1970 was a lot of fucking money.
Yeah, it's more like $1,500, $2,000.
Yeah. So she's like, you could see her kind of swallow it with a rock in her throat, but she wants to be supportive for her husband. Mm-hmm. And as he's trying it on and he was like, so I went ahead and ordered 2 more. We'll be able to make it work, right? Because I can't just wear the same jacket all the time. And you see like the fear in her eye of, okay, how am I going to feed my kids and keep the lights on? But meanwhile, she's smiling and going, yeah, sweetie, you know, whatever, you know, you deserve it. And whatever's going to do, make you feel better. He comes home, says, I don't like the medical profession. I want to become a lawyer.
Right.
And she's like, are you kidding me?
So now everybody's got to understand, Sabrina's watched the show. So Sabrina gets mm-hmm. to see the emotional responses and where I have only read about it. So I don't
factual, very factual. Right.
I don't have the emotional connection that Sabrina has. Okay.
Right.
So, now where the fuck was I going with that?
So when he switches from medical school to being.
So the articles had said that he chose to go into law because he wanted to focus on malpractice with the medical. That so that's the reasoning behind why he wanted to do it, not just willy-nilly per se.
Well, so that's the way that he sold it on her and what he ended up doing. But the way that it shows in the show, which might not be because it does say, you know, they've added some stuff for dramatic effects, that he didn't have that person-to-person connection on the medical side. And he didn't have the passion on the medical side. And so when he got into it, he was like, nope, I think I could become a lawyer and connect my medical degree to the attorney and make even more money and be able to argue. And you don't need a human connection with people and to be caring and loving and hugging the way a doctor would be.
Yes.
So you, again, you see this fear in her eyes and she goes, you know, whatever you think's best, we'll make it work. And then she's pregnant again and she's has a miscarriage again and all, and has to go through another 4 to 6 years while he becomes an attorney. And at some point, they gain wealth where she's living off of, you know, almost $25,000 a month is how much she's blowing a month. I mean, they became very wealthy.
Right.
But she always connected it back like, can you believe how hard we worked and where we came from? And he used to get mad at her. Don't talk about that time.
Right.
That's embarrassing. We're rich. And she'd always say like, well, but you can't be embarrassed of where we came from. It used to be the six of us in a shitty apartment with no power. And don't talk about that, Betty. Don't talk about that. So she was still kind of humbled about their past where he wasn't. He was a rich attorney and that's all he cared about.
And that probably comes from the fact that while he went to school to, you know, come create the career to be where they are successfully now, he didn't do any of the other work. He didn't do the hard, hard shit.
No, like, he didn't.
No. So, yeah, he's embarrassed about his past because he's a fucking schmuck.
Yeah, because he was playing somebody else in at Harvard or whatever schools he went to. They didn't know he lived in a shitty apartment with four kids and a wife doing everything. He got to be a law student. He got to be a medical student. He also never participated in any of the group, like chats and study groups, because he used Betty as his study partner. The entire 8 to 10 years he was in college for medical and being a lawyer, he would use her to study these flashcards, to study all of this. Huh. Now, in their closing statement, they talk about his natural God-given talent to be a medical professional and an attorney and how lucky she should be. And in her closing statement last night, because she ended up representing herself in the final divorce, she said, it wasn't God, it was me. I stayed up every night and quizzed him and helped him. And how quickly you all have forgotten that.
Right.
And like, I have chills just thinking about that now, because this case became so famous because it was a very rich family and a housewife deserving or receiving nothing.
Right.
After almost 20 years of marriage, mm-hmm, and being told that this house isn't yours, this wealth isn't yours, your kids are being taken away. She literally earns no money at this point.
Right.
She has no savings. Dan put the house and all the real estate and all this other stuff they owned in separate names, in separate properties, and kept her off of it. And then when they started getting divorced, he used his legal mind and the advice of his co-workers that were attorneys to fuck her over. So meanwhile, she'd be getting, and he paid for her attorney. And then when she realized that that attorney was not, right, was not helping her, she fired him, and then he would tell her, like, well, go find another attorney and I'll pay for it. Because he also knew that everything after their separation date, she would have to pay him back. She didn't know that. He was acting like he was doing her a favor. Meanwhile, he's tallying up these bills, which last night at the end of their divorce, based on all the fees he fined her as well, he started fining her during this 4-year divorce. Every time that she called him a dickhead on his voicemail, He started fining her $100. By the end of it, the judge ordered that she owed him $700,000. He owed her $28,000.
Because that's a lot of dickheads.
Right, it was. But she, you should see the episodes. And this is the part where I say, like, she was kind of fucking crazy.
Right.
Because it was voicemail after voicemail after voicemail. And then he would give the tapes to his law assistant, and she would type it all up. So every one of those voicemails had been typed and put in
a deposition, which makes it a fee.
Right. Now, there was also only one judge that finally said, like, enough is enough. You're dragging this woman through the court. But then the rest of the judicial system was set up against her. She, you know, California's a no-fault state, so it didn't matter that he had gotten this young girlfriend and lied to her about it. That's the part that started to make her go crazy, right? She started saying, there's something going on. There's something going on. And he kept saying, no, there's not. And even during his divorce, he would still send her flowers. He would still go to see her while he was dropping off the kids and have this really nice conversation and like, oh, well, you know, we're supposed to have that court hearing on Friday, but I'm going to request to extend it. And you look really good today, Betty. And so she'd go inside and be like, oh, okay, he's going to extend it. Well, he never did. So there's a lot of fucking court appearances that she never went to because he told her they weren't going to happen. And she stupidly believed him.
Right. I think a lot of what the biggest problem is, she's a smart woman.
Very smart.
But very dumb at the same time. Mm-hmm. She is very dumb. Somewhere along the line while she was helping her husband learn legal, I'm surprised she didn't pick up anything.
I know.
And I think this also has to do with her upbringing, right? Like, believing the flowers, believing we're staying together, even though he needs some separation. She just could not see the red flags, right?
Right.
I am sure there was a red...
Or she didn't want to.
Right, she didn't want to. As most women don't want to when there's red flags, right? So, because she had this fairy tale in mind, and this was going to be the fairy tale. But it wasn't a fairy tale. Look, a red flag for me would have been my husband telling me I can't have birth control. It's not like birth control was illegal. You know, it's already a form of manipulation. This guy's a fucking douchebag, right? Unfortunately, she was not emotionally strong enough to stand up to him.
Well, I don't think it's so much that she wasn't emotionally strong enough. I think it's of the times. She was exactly who she was supposed to be for a wife in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
You know, that seeing that, if we take Betty Broderick and put her in 2020, I'd have no problem saying that. Like, bitch, you were dumb. You didn't fucking listen. You saw all the red flags and you believed in a fairy tale. The truth is that life wasn't a fairy tale back then. That's the way it was set up. You had a perfect husband. You worked really hard. You were the rich housewife that had four perfect kids, two boys, two girls. You had a Cadillac. You had this.
Right.
She had that perfect life. And she played that perfect part because that's what she was supposed to do. That's what her mom told her to do. That's what her mom did. That's what her grandma did.
That's what society told her was supposed to do. And I understand that. But that's part of the reason why she wasn't able to stand up for herself, which is why she went batshit crazy.
Well, yeah, and it's also the reason why, like, at Betty Broderick's expense, mentally, physically, her freedom, where you and I are on a better ground today, right?
Right.
Because it's cases like this and women like this that
woke us the fuck up.
Yeah. That said, hey, listen, you better have control over something. You better be reading everything. You better... Even if you are a at-home wife, you better stake some claim somewhere.
So I can give you my personal experience with this. So first thing is, I grew up, you know, lesbian moms. And the number one rule in my house was, make sure to always have your own money, and no matter what you buy, you make sure you can afford on your own. Right? Okay. And then it was, don't ever let a man take care of you, you know, all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dion and I got together, and I was not happy in the corporate world doing what I was doing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he had made the offer of me to quit working. Well, we're not married at this point. So I'm going, eh. So we discussed it, and I said, look, I said, if this is going to be a thing, you know, real, I said, I need my name on all the checking accounts, plain and simple. And mm-hmm. I handle all the bills. Because mm-hmm. that was the number one thing. I was like, I would like to control the money.
Right.
Right. And he agreed. No argument. No nothing. He was like, yep, absolutely. He handed it all over to me. But I knew that you always got to be protected. But I also had a husband who looked at me and said, anything from this point, we build together. Right. Mm-hmm. It is ours. Not mine, not yours, not any of this. If it ever doesn't work out, everything goes 50-50. You know? Right. So, and we've set that up. But my husband's right. awesome, and this is a dickwad. So.
Right, yeah. And also, you know, we've got 30 years.
Right.
Of women like Betty that have had to go through this for the judicial system to say, okay, let's set standards for, so like in the state of Florida, if you were to be divorced, there are now standards to it where it is a 50-50 split no matter what. And then you can negotiate up, but they won't allow you to negotiate down.
Right. And I'm just going to say this. In some cases, it has gone to the extreme on the other side where women are getting special legal treatments than men. And I can tell you that when Dion went through his first divorce, now mind you, it was quite a time before him and I met, the ex had wrote down on a piece of paper a company name and a dollar amount, and a company name and a dollar amount, and turned that in as a receipt. Mm-hmm. And it was upheld. It's not a fucking receipt. Yeah. That doesn't prove you spent that money on a kid.
Right.
Look, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
they
accepted, and he had to pay all this back, right? You know,
right,
so
right.
It was, I feel like it's come a long way, and it's much better for women. And it was because mm-hmm. of cases like this.
It is, yeah. And because if not, this is the terrible thing, is they made her seem like she was a money-grubbing, and I'm sure like the way that you probably thought of it at first, when you read the facts of, oh, well, he bought her an oceanfront home and she was getting, you know, $17,000 a month, which that's a shit ton of money.
Right,
so it sounds like, and this is the way it was spun against her is, I mean, man, Miss Broadwick, you sure have some really high expenses. And what else do you want from this man? And her answer was, my fair share.
Right. And let me clarify, because in the three articles I wrote, only mm-hmm. one, and it was E! Online, made one line regarding alimony that she received, the house and the house
yeah.
that she received. That was it. Everything else left it out. All the articles I read had me thinking this woman was penniless broke.
Oh, yeah. Well, for her lifestyle, she was penniless broke. That oceanside home was actually rat infested.
Okay.
It actually, like, it at some point, she didn't have power in her home. Like, her kids went to private schools and all this stuff that he then started deducting from that. And up until their divorce lasted 4 to 5 years, she was receiving $9,000 a month. But from that $9,000, he started deducting things at his will. And he would file the court paperwork and, again, like, lie to her, get it through. And it became part of legal court documents that he was now fining her and deducting certain things. So where some months she wouldn't get anything.
Right. And that's fucked up. And isn't that illegal?
Well, it wasn't back then, but I will tell you, being a woman and going through a divorce, the first thing that happened to me was, you're not receiving any money. He moved out, moved in with his girlfriend, left me with the mortgage. First mortgage payment hadn't even been made, left me with the childcare and everything. And it was my job to figure it out. It was my job to hire an attorney and then force him to pay me. But if not, that was the first thing that happened. He went in, took all our money out of our accounts, took, you know, there was some type of big check coming that he went to the house while I was at work because he had, you know, was able to leave and stole the check and signed it. And it just became the first attack was money. The second attack was to, once I got mad and got an attorney and realized I'd have to fight to be able to financially take care of my kid without asking for help, because I wasn't going to go back to my parents and ask for fucking help. You know, I knew that this man had to pay me in some way. So then I started sending letters to his work. I started sending faxes to his work because thank goodness he worked for the military and the military doesn't fuck around with that. And so every single month I faxed paperwork to the head of the base.
Not even the head of
his. No, I went to the base. I went to the head of his squadron. I went to his personal lead. Every single month, 3 to 4 people would get a fucking fax until that direct deposit was set up. If not, I would have never seen. If he was a civil worker and worked for Loeb, I would have never seen a dime. But because I annoyed the fuck out of the Navy, they said, yeah, they said, do something or you're going to start getting in trouble.
And, you know, this is part of our, like, the problem is, I understand divorces are highly emotional and they are messy as shit, right? So, but how do you walk out on your kid? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like all of a sudden there's a divorce and now, like you said, you're responsible for fucking everything, you know?
Right. Well, so that's how he took her kids from her, is the house was infested in rats. She called him because who does she call? She calls the man that she's known for the last 20 years. Same thing with me. I was lucky to eventually meet Randy, but until then, I didn't know what the fuck to do. If the water heater broke in my house, I don't have any money. I don't know. That was my husband's job, right? So she called him and he hung up and said, that's not my problem. So she went to his house, dropped off all 4 kids and said, okay, well then these are your problems. I'm not going to be your fucking babysitter in a rat-filled home. She left town so that he couldn't drop those kids back off. He filed an emergency injunction against her that she abandoned the kids and took full custody of them. And she never could regain full custody after that. And I can tell you, so this is the other part of the mental side where, you know, you say, you know, read the red flags. Like I knew, like my husband was already living with another woman. However, what he was telling me, I can remember one time sitting and crying outside the commissary because he was sending me messages that, you know, how terrible of a mistake he made. And, you know, he knows that I'll never forgive him and how much he could go, wanted to go back. And so then, like, I'm on the phone with him now. Now we're like, I'm crying and saying, you know, you can't say these things to me. By then, I'd already met Nate. And so I think it was more that, like, he didn't want to see me happy and moving on. But these are the things that he would say to me when nobody else was around. When everybody else was around, I was a bitch and I was fat and I was disgusting and I was pathetic and I still wanted him. But these were the things that he was saying to me. So then I called his fucking girlfriend on three-way and said, hey, why don't you just listen to this? And I clicked back over and he started vomiting all this sweet stuff to me. Right. So she could hear it because I'm not the fucking crazy one. But I felt crazy at some points when people are like, well, why do you care? What? Well, my husband is telling me.
Right. It's not
things.
Like it's just some stranger you met. It's someone that you have invested in, you're vulnerable to, that you trust wholeheartedly, right? And then they're saying these things.
Yeah.
I understand. I had an emotionally manipulative partner at one time. She could literally make you feel like $1 million and a piece of shit all in the same fucking sentence.
Right. And you're smart and you know that it's happening, but you also
can't control it, especially when you're young. The youth has a lot to do with it, because when we grow up, we're believing this fairy tale, watching TV, you're going to meet this boy, you're going to kiss, and you're going to live happily ever after. But the part you're missing is the guy's fucking lying to you from the beginning, and you don't know it because you don't know any better.
Right. And you feel like you know him so well. And you know, I feel like that's what Betty did go crazy. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, she ran her car into his house. She spray painted the entire inside of his house. She left thousands of voicemails on his answer. She did go crazy, but not because I think she's crazy, but because he helped drive her crazy. The parts of, well, whenever he hired that the girlfriend that he ended up marrying, that you said was a receptionist that now all of a sudden is a law clerk, she said, fire her. And he finally came home and said, weird that you think you could tell me what to do. All of this is my fucking stuff. Because she said, fire him and get out. And so here comes the end of the month and he doesn't do it. And that's when it finally hit her, when he said, you don't tell me what to do. Weird that you think this is a partnership.
Right.
This is all mine.
And
I do what I want to do.
Went off and went, oh.
A fear of like, oh, fuck, too. Like, he's right. There's nothing I can do. Now, she burned all his stuff. She burned all it. I mean, she really tried to hurt him.
The difference, too, is today, a man would have said that to us today. We would have been like, okay. And we would have been really quiet. And we really wouldn't have done or said anything. And we would have devised a plan and got really fucking smart. Right? Because. But she didn't know how to do that.
Well, because nobody had set the ground rules for her or a foundation for her, right? You had your mom saying, look, do this, this, and this. My mother, same thing. Make sure you can provide for yourself. Never rely on a man for everything. Jen's mom, same thing. You become financially independent. Let me tell you, when I went through my divorce and I didn't take any handouts, I lost my house. Even though my parents had the money to pay for the house and just sell it, I didn't want that. It was my fucking fault. This was my responsibility, and I had to suffer the consequences of it. But I fucking did it, and have my son to look at me and say, you know, she fucking did it, and she worked hard. But it's because women like Betty and your mom and my mom and Jen's mom and all these, there's a reason why they tell us, you fucking make sure you're set. You make sure if he leaves tomorrow, you can take care of you and your kids or you, because you deserve it.
Absolutely.
So do you think, is she a victim or a murderer?
I think she's both. I think she's both because, you know, she had said, let me read you, hold on. If Dan hadn't acted as he did during the divorce, I would have been fine. I would have had my house, my kids. I would have still worn a size 6. I could have had done my superior dance. You know?
Yeah.
And considering everything now mind you, when I wrote this, only come factual basis, that sounds like... because I was thinking, well, how exactly did he act? Right? Because all the articles never mentioned that he withheld money. Right. The articles didn't say that, the articles actually had said he had her committed after shit was going down. He had her arrested because she was vandalizing these things. Right. So it made her seem like everything he did was retroactive to her initial behavior. So when I read this, right, where Dan hadn't acted as such, I'm going, well, what did Dan do? You guys were going through a...
Besides leave you, what did he do?
So what did he... You know, you're upset he left you for another woman. That doesn't warrant murder. And then she goes, I have never had emotional disturbance or mental illness, except when he provoked or a disturbance. My emotional outbursts were only a response to Dan's calculating, hateful way of dealing with our divorce. He was hammering into me and everyone else that I was crazy. How long can you live with that? And again, when I heard this, I was like, well, what about the violent fights before that your children observed before you guys were going through a divorce? You know, so I was seeing a different side of it. And as far as the whole him hammering to me and telling everyone else that I was crazy, it really made me think about the conversation you had, you and I had about the housewives and someone calling the other girl a liar. How do you respond to that?
Right.
You can't say anything because then you're the crazy one or you're the, right? He had the perfect setup.
Right. Well, he did. So, like, when she finally got smart and reached out to the media and was going to tell her side of the story, she decided that she was going to defend herself in court because she couldn't afford an attorney, and attorneys always lost against Dan anyways. And she said, I know the questions to ask because I know what he's trying to circle around. And so I know exactly how to go after him. What was I saying?
She couldn't get an attorney. She got smart, the media.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So when she finally got an attorney and this was going to be her final chance, the media was in the courtroom. The first thing he does is request a closed
court. Of course he does.
Court, because to protect the children. So when she says no, he is doing this to protect himself, the judge looked at her and was like, well, the only benefit of this is to protect the children. So you're either a good mom or you're not. And so she was like, well, then I guess close it, because they left her no other choice. But she wanted it to be an open courtroom so she could finally tell her side and her story would be out.
Okay, this is during the divorce, not the trial.
This is during the divorce, the very last hearing. And so, or the very last set that determines spousal support. So then she's having dinner or lunch with her friends at a country club who are all married to husbands. And she's supposed to start a job at a nursery. She gets a job and they're like, are you sure? Like, this is already set in place. And she was like, yeah. And why? And they were like, well, does Dan know? And she goes, no, Dan doesn't know. He doesn't have to know, but I'm going to need to get a job and need to work. And this daycare is agreed to hire me, and it's already in the works. I start in such and such. And she goes, well, I just want you to know that my husband said that the reason your case was closed is because you were molesting the children. And that they did that to protect
you. So there was none of that in any article.
No. Right. So it made her look. So, of course, that high end daycare was like, we're not messing with somebody who's, you know, a child molester. And that's why she doesn't have her kids. And look, so it's got to be true. They closed the courtroom.
Wow.
I mean, she just got fucked, left her. He did not want her to work. He didn't want her to be able to get a job and move on. Like, there became a point where it became fun for him. Because even his legal assistant or his secretary that was typing all this up asked him at one point, like, is this really necessary? And he told her to mind her own fucking business and do her job. It became a sport to drive her fucking crazy. And you did. And she shot your dumbass.
Yep, she sure did.
So I agree. She is a victim and she is a murderer. Because eventually she did. After this final court hearing, she went and killed the both of them. Shot the both of them.
Right, because she stole her daughter's key to the house and then killed him.
Do you think she's crazy or was driven to madness?
I think she is a victim of her circumstances.
Yeah, I think she was driven to it. I think that if if they would have had a clean divorce, she would have been some rich wife living off his alimony there for the rest of her life.
Right.
And she would have met some other rich attorney and married him. But she didn't seem like somebody that was cuckoo to begin with. Do you think if this would have happened in 2020, she was sentenced to 32 years to life in prison.
Right.
And her last two parole hearings have been denied because the judge has told her she has no she shows no remorse. She still hates him as much as she did back in 1989.
Yep.
And will not release her.
Yeah. So I think if this had happened today, it would have happened a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
One, she would have been equipped with more knowledge and education right. about the law. She would have grown up in a society where it encourages women to be more than just a blindly following housewife.
Right.
And when this would have started going down, she would have prepared herself better. I believe if this had happened in 2020, she would have said, okay, you're going through a divorce. She would have gone outside of San Diego area, found an attorney that or a law firm that he didn't have his fucking paws into. Because, mind you, he was only the San Diego Bar Association. Right. He was not in charge of the entire fucking state.
Right.
Okay. She could have drove 40 minutes south or any other direction and gotten another attorney.
Right.
You know, in today's time. Now, I don't know how far his power expanded back in 89.
Right.
Right. And she would have gotten her fair share.
Right.
Because if she hadn't, again, she would have used the media.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that if we take the financial side out of the divorce, I think obviously going into 2020, it would have been a much cleaner divorce.
Yes.
Because there are laws and rules now to protect women and children from this exact situation. Also, if she still would have killed him based on everything that just happened, and then she would have killed him, I also think that there's a better understanding of mental health these days. There is a woman here in Jacksonville that shot her husband in his head. Her husband said that the months leading up to it, she just didn't seem herself. There was no physical abuse between the two of them. There was not a history of cheating between the two of them. He was working at his home office and she came up behind him and shot him in the head. Mm-hmm. And she is not doing jail time because he fought for her mental health and said, look, something went wrong up here. She's not a criminal, but something went wrong here. And I think in 2020, we realize that more than we did in 1989, when you're just like, oh, look at her. She's a murderer. Let's put her in jail for the rest of her life.
Agreed. And she would not be in jail, but she would be in a mental facility.
Yeah. Or she would have done some time of maybe manslaughter or something of, you know, that quick reaction where you just snap. But not full-fledged murder for the rest of your life.
Right. And she got second-degree murder. And I kind of have to agree with that because, look, you have to prove manslaughter means there's no intent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She stole her daughter's key to that house. That proves some intent.
Yeah, she definitely planned to kill them.
Yes. So, I mean, that's, you know, I could, like when she had said, you know, my self-defense, I'm going, wait. No. It wasn't your self-defense because self-defense would have been you and him are in an argument and shit got crazy and you accidentally shot him. Kind of can understand that self-defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand why she was driven there to do it, but I wouldn't claim that self-defense.
I think that being in it myself, and I can tell you there's like one moment that still haunts me where my ex-husband had gone, he was famous for just picking up my kid all the time and then threatening to keep him forever. And there was nothing I could do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't call the police because it's a domestic issue, right, that family court has to address, where the very last time I did go back to court and get it put in the documents that the police can physically remove my son when he's been stolen, which was what he was doing, right? But I just remember this one point sitting in the bathtub and him in these text messages and these phone calls and the ex-girlfriend in the background having my baby son call her mom, and just this fucking abuse where I was just crying and in a ball and saying there's nothing that I could do.
Right.
This was 20 years after Betty, but there's also some points where you're like, what the fuck? Why do you have to keep hurting me? You're remarried. You have a girl. Like, Dan had his bride. He right. had, but he still used Betty as a sport. So where I would say for her self-defense is her mental, where she probably felt like that was the only way out. If he wasn't dead, she would never find peace.
And that could be very well true.
Yeah. I asked Nate yesterday, I said, if my ex-husband didn't get up and move away and just completely walk away, would this have been our life in some form? Would we have constantly, because up until then, I had almost $20,000 in attorney's fees and I was 22 years old.
Right.
That's as much as I made a year, that trying to fight just to keep my kid, just to keep some type of order.
Right.
Like, would this have been my life? Would this, and are there women still going through this?
Oh, I'm sure there are women still going through this.
And men. I mean, let's be honest too, right? There's women that use their children, but I'm just talking about, you know, I feel like Betty and these women of the 70s and 80s are the heroes for us because we've learned from what they had to fucking go through.
Right. We learned from their quote unquote mistakes.
Yeah. Well, basically their life. Of right. What was normal, that was normal.
And unfortunately for these women, their adulthood happened in a transition period in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they were brought up in the past and didn't know how to handle the future.
Right.
You know, so that makes it really hard for for her. And I have one question, though, and I wrote it down. And again, mind you, everybody, when I wrote this down, I was all article fact-based. I said, if he had never cheated or left, would she still be married to her abusive husband and be happy about it?
I think so, because in her mind, she didn't realize that she was being conditioned all those years. Like, if you listen to the way, so when I first read the story and found out about the series and just went online, I was like, oh, okay, so she was this money hungry lady, blah, 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 blah. While watching the episodes and the things that he says to her, she had a very happy marriage. He just had this way of delivering a line of, well, we can do that, which wouldn't be beneficial for me, but because you are such a good wife and you provide for our family, I know that you're going to see that this is the better decision. And of course I will. So for her, right, like she said, she followed the rules. He was the one who broke the rules. She right. was a good wife. She was a good mom. She was a good partner. She was a good co-worker for him because she was his legal assistant up to a certain point until they hired one. That he broke the rules. But in her mind, she had a happy marriage. So, yeah, I think if he never cheated, she would have.
Yeah.
So, and it does show that Dan was, and I don't know how true this is, but when he became a partner in this wealthier law firm, he was happily married. And he was looking at the other partners that were already cheating on their wives. Because back then, this wasn't uncommon. You know, men, even in the 50s and 60s, men cheated on their wives all the time and it was okay. You know, people just kind of turned their heads to it. He was against it at first.
Right.
Until then it became a sport and something his friends were doing. And it, to me, it almost was like Dan got sucked into it and he was a bad person that saw
a good opportunity. I don't think he was always good because of the way that he had conditioned her for years.
Right.
He just wasn't a cheater and everything that whole time.
Or he just hadn't gotten caught because she was too busy raising the kids and supporting him to notice he may have been sleeping on the side.
Yeah, yeah. The show that it does not show any of that. So in my mind, because he still is the victim too, but I do think like in her, I don't know. I think they did have a good marriage in her head and in his head. She was a good partner.
Well, I guess, well, but then I think back to the whole, he wouldn't allow her to have birth control.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, so, let's be honest. He's not a great husband. Yeah.
It wasn't a healthy relationship to begin with.
Not at all. Yeah.
It was she was a young girl, naive. She met the criteria, the family, right? Very pretty. He probably knew from the beginning he could manipulate her any way he wanted, which is what he wanted.
Yeah, in the very first episode when they meet, he says this line that I paused it and rewind it, and he said, "You're perfect."
For when what?
When she was saying that she came from this kind of family and these were her goals, he said, "You're perfect." So it was like he had been hunting for that perfect wife to fill that position. He had his goals and he just needed that perfect person.
Right.
And that she was a smart woman, but not 100% driven to become anything else besides a housewife, which isn't a terrible job, but I'm just saying that he did pick her because she would be perfect for this part in his life.
Right. And there isn't anything wrong with being a housewife. I'm a housewife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can be more, it's more than just being a housewife. And it's actually a lot harder than people fucking give it credit for.
Well, it is for sure. And Betty worked her fucking ass off and worked all these side jobs to lift up his career and give him that forward momentum that he needed.
Right.
And it's a sad story. So I find it interesting that their four kids are still divided.
Right.
The two younger boys think that she's served enough time, where the older girls think that she needs to stay in there. And so then I wonder if it's because the older children saw more.
Right.
And so they have a better understanding of how crazy their mom was. And maybe the dad was trying to work against her or protect them or whatever it was. But then in this last episode, the kid did say, the daughter did, she was getting mad at her mom and calling her crazy. And she was like, and by the way, you should ask dad when you interrogate him tomorrow or depose him, the names that him and my new mom call you, monster, the crazy, the this, the that. So Dan and his girlfriend were telling the children how crazy the mom was.
Right. And also I saw in one of the articles that the two boys asked to go live with mom because not having her kids was making her crazy. The kids, the little boys knew that. And I think it also has to do with age, right? Like,
yeah.
And they're at that age being able to be manipulated by both sides.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Huh. I like the story. I like that it shared this other side. I wonder how many other women are in jail because of this same kind of scenario. Right. That have been like, so, you know, I think I've said before that I was arrested for domestic violence and I had to go to these anger management courses in this downstairs basement of a women's shelter. And one of the rules in there was, first of all, you had to take full blame. You could never say, well, I did this because of this. It was, I did this.
Okay.
Was part of the program. There was no blame shifting, but sitting around listening to all these women, was very eye-opening. A lot of them were minorities. A lot of them were older white women,
uh-huh.
Right? Older white women that had no financial means. You know, at that time I was 22 years old, 23 years old. So I'm talking about a 6-year-old woman just like Betty who is now living with her abusive husband and can't go anywhere. So when she's saying, well, people say I should leave, where am I going to go? I'm a 6-year-old woman with no money. you know, James made all the money or whoever it was. But every single one of those women found themselves in a position, unlike me, that could get up and leave.
Right.
They couldn't. They were all stuck in this life where people are looking at them saying, well, why don't you just leave?
Right.
Well, he is the provider and he's the one making the money and he's the one, he's going to take my kids from me and he's going to do, it's scary.
It is. It's very scary. You have to, you know, I think it's cases like this that make women wake up. And also, you know, we need to be better at selecting.
Yeah,
we need to make them really prove themselves before we jump on the bandwagon, right? I mean.
Right. Or like what you've said is, you know, you control the money. I control the money here. I know what's coming in and out.
Right.
I'm not going to get fucked over again. That's for damn sure. Right. Well, quite honestly, Nate can take the kids and I'll pay him child support. It seems like a lot of work now. I'll take every other weekends and a couple Wednesdays.
Well, Ethan's already grown. So, yeah, but you're leaving him with Lorelai and she's about to hit teenage years. Yeah, send her over there.
I know. Right, right. And Nate can keep the house too. I don't want to keep all this up. Just go get myself a little condo somewhere.
There you go.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. So, where I'm at in the episode is she just bought the gun.
Okay.
Oh, and you realize that it's just not her husband tormenting her. It is stupid little fucking girlfriend, too. Because here this whole time, I've thought, well, she fell in love with the wrong man kind of thing. Nope. She was constantly mailing articles of their engagement to her house anonymously. Eat your heart out, bitch, written across it and over and over. So, girlfriend... And one of her friends say, hey, listen, Betty has said, like, if you just give her the China set, like, she'll move on. Like, that's all she really wants.
Right.
And she was like, maybe you can find it. And she goes, maybe I'll break it.
Yes.
She was like, she'll never see it.
And see, that should have been put in the court to have add additional fees for every time she was fucking enticing Betty.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
No. See, that's crazy.
Yeah, so up until last night at the very last 30 seconds, I thought girlfriend was, or she was, yeah, new wife was just a victim of, you know, the crazy hatred. Like, you know, the same way I felt towards, you know, my ex's girlfriend at the time. But, you know, she was enticing me as, like, she was poking at me as well. And I don't understand
why women would do that. Like, you know, it's just. Why? Like, oh, look, I stole your man. Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, it's happening to one of our friends now. You know, our friend that was recently divorced over the last couple of years, where that new person as well was saying shit to her. Like, watch what you ask for. Because that's what happened in my case. When my ex left her was, well, you got what you wanted. You wanted my husband. And my husband was actually a piece of shit.
So now you got a piece of shit. Look, I have a rule.
Yeah.
Once a cheater, always a cheater. So and another rule is if you cheat with them, they will cheat on you.
Oh, for sure. Let's be honest. The friend we're talking about, he's definitely going to cheat on her again. We all know it. And I can't wait till it fucking happens.
Yep.
I will dance on her tears.
There you go.
Because the bitch is going to get what she deserves.
Yep, absolutely.
So here, I have a little game for you.
Yay.
So you know that I keep some notes in my phone all the time. So I've been going through them, and I want to read some of them to you and see if they'll give us some talking points.
Shit.
So, why do Floridians know so much about cockroaches?
Because ours are so big.
So, this is the thing. So I've lived here for 20 years almost. 19 years, 18 years, something like that. No matter what, every time I'm inside somebody's house and you see one of those big cockroaches, I'm like, ugh, there's a cockroach. And no matter what, a Floridian will say, That's not a cockroach. No, that's a right. palmetto bug. That's an outside bug. Well, why do I only see those fuckers inside people's houses then? So that's what I was saying to Nate last night. I was like, doesn't that then make it an inside roach? And he was like, no, they live in the outdoors. They just come in the inside. And I said, so do the little baby ones go outside?
And only the big ones come in?
Yeah. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Why does every Floridian say the same? Every single time I see one of those big ones, I'm like, oh, there's a cockroach. No, that's a palmetto bug. All right. We can call it whatever you want to fucking call it. But that's a cockroach.
It's a cockroach looking thing that's inside. And I think the reason why we don't see them outside is because they're normally in trees.
That's what Nate said. He was like, because they're living in trees, trying to grow into big motherfuckers. And then I was like, well, then they come inside?
To die?
Because then that would make it an indoor pest.
Yeah, but you never see the baby ones.
Ever.
So are they really insiders or are they start outsiders and then come inside?
Or I think maybe it's a level of cockroaches, is that those little ones, which Nate said are German cockroaches, which I said, okay, but...
Yes, and you don't want those in your house.
So I said, by the way, only a Floridian knows the difference between the two. Like, growing up in Virginia Beach, we didn't know that.
No.
Why do you know it's a German fucking cockroach?
So, but I grew up in Virginia. So in Virginia, if there was a roach inside your house, it was just a fucking cockroach.
Right.
There were no German cockroaches or whatever. It was just
palmetto bugs. None of that shit.
Right. You come to Florida, it's like, oh, that's a palmetto bug. That one's a German roach. That's one of those flying ones. And like,
why do we know so much about cockroaches down here?
I don't know. So like, we had to hire pest control because we had Germans. Cockroaches in the house, and we had to have the entire house sprayed and all that kind of stuff. And those motherfuckers are hard to kill.
Right. Like,
really, really, really. Luckily, they are all gone.
Right.
But the guy who was coming in spraying the house and I was talking to, he's like, yeah, he's like, you probably brought it in if you bought anything at like Goodwill or like a picture or something, they hide and then,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, I'm never buying a fucking thing from Goodwill ever again. And he's like, even that new one over there, it's completely infested.
Ugh, yeah, see?
Because that's like, if you think about it, people donate shit, they sort through it, and then they put it on the shelves. They don't actually, like, sterilize anything. So
no.
Then there's probably all kinds of bugs in there.
For sure. For sure. I just think it's hilarious that Floridians know more about cockroaches than any state or any person I've ever known. And they are fucking insistent that those palmetto bugs are outdoor bugs. And it is just a coincidence that's in their house.
Well, because I don't know if you were raised this way, but I was raised, if you've got roaches, you're dirty.
Well, exactly. Right. And I think that's what everybody associates it with, rather than maybe we just live in a state that because of the heat and the wetness, that it's just fucking around. And
right.
Sometimes, like our garage, we'll get those palmetto bugs. And it's also, that's where our recycle bin is, which our bug company is like, look, they're never going to go away. You're always going to have 1, 2, 4, 5, or 6 of them because you're putting your recycle bin out here.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just the fact that this, we're very defensive about it.
We are. So I have a palmetto bug story to share with you.
Okay.
All right, so this, I was probably 10 years old, so early 90s. My mom was in Tallahassee, and I was spending the summer with her down there, and I was sleeping in the office on an air mattress, right? But the ceiling wood was, it was actual wood, and it had those black spots in it from the wood, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I'm laying there like this, and I'm looking at the ceiling, and then I realize one of those black spots are moving. I start screaming. I'm like, Mom! Oh my God! The ceiling's moving! The ceiling's moving! I am like fucking running through the house.
Oh God.
She's like, what? I'm like, look! Look up! And it was there, and then the fucker fell in my bed. I was like, ah! I'm not going back in there. Oh, I got it. I'm like, I'm not going back in there. I'm not going back in
there. Yeah, you can't help but have the heebie-jeebies after that.
Right? I'm like, no, no, we're good. I'm like, I'm sleeping in your room tonight.
Yeah, Nate and I spent the night like 10 years ago at somebody's house, and we had been drinking too much. We live on the north side. They were over in Mandarin. So we decided just to spend the night. And in the middle of the night, I get up to pee. I'm sober now. And I go to pee and I feel something on my leg and I hit it and it was a cockroach. Now, it's one of the bigger ones. I like scream. I like pull up my pants. I grab Nate. He comes in there and he's like, that's just a palmetto bug. That's an outside bug. There's a... I could not. I tried to lay back down on the couch and I could feel them all crawling over me. And I was like, this house is infested. I have to leave. Mm-hmm. So we got up at like 1:30 in the morning because now we're both sober. And we left.
Yeah.
Never told the person why, never said anything, because I know in my head it was just a one-time occurrence, but I could not get the feeling of those fuckers off of me.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. Now, I had a friend in elementary school. I only went over to her house once, stayed the night. That was it. Because when you turned on the light, the roaches scattered.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm talking like massive amounts.
So those are the indoor ones, right?
Well, those were totally the indoor ones. Those were the dirty ones.
Right, right. That's what, when we first came down here to house hunt, we stayed the night at somebody's house, which was in a trailer, which we didn't know that coming there. And this sounds kind of stuck up, but up until I moved here, I didn't even know that people actually lived in trailers or even apartments. I didn't realize kids grew up in apartments because I only grew up in suburbs and neighborhoods, and everybody I knew grew up in houses.
Okay.
No, I didn't realize. I thought like apartments were for 20-year-olds.
Right.
Because that's the places I'd gone, even at 16, 17 to party was with 20-year-olds. Not until I got married did I realize that families actually lived in those places. So we get down here and I stay the night in my first trailer ever. Mm-hmm. I'm like 20-something years old and it had cockroaches. First of all, the front yard had fleas in this whole fucking trailer park community. And then the house had roaches. And I can remember my ex and I just going all night long like, we're not going to be able to fucking sleep. Like, we could hear, like, this is happening.
Could you hear them going?
Yeah, they were there. It was, we spent every moment we could out that weekend. Hated going back because it's just, ugh.
I would have
But it's not that the person was dirty either. I just think.
Oh, this is the house you were staying at?
Yeah, it was in a trailer house, and we were sleeping on their pull-out couch, which in my mind, that couch underneath definitely had roaches. That I think it was, once one trailer in a community has it in Florida, that everybody gets it, right?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
I've never lived in a trailer, so.
I also made me wonder that because every Floridian is so insistent on cockroaches and knows more about cockroaches than any person I know, is it taught in school? And maybe I just missed it too. Is there in biology or science in elementary school?
I have no idea. Maybe that's why Floridians are okay with the cockroaches.
Right, right. Well, I feel like they've been conditioned just by their parents somehow to be like, nope. Outdoor cockroach, it's fine. Just squish it, throw it outside.
Right. It's like, it's no big deal.
Yeah. Ugh. So this is my next note on here. Okay. It says Alanis Morissette.
Alanis Morissette.
It's easier to be angry at someone instead of be saddened. So it is the 25-year anniversary of the release of Jagged Little Pill.
Right.
And I was watching, again, I saw a preview scrolling down Facebook that she had done like this documentary or interview about the album. So I watched like a snip of it and she was talking about the song You Oughta Know.
Right.
You know, where, you know, do you think of me when you fuck her? Will she go down on you in a theater? That great.
Do you know who that's about?
Who?
That's about Joey from Full House.
Is it?
Yeah, Dave something or another. Cut It Out. That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who that song is about.
That's super cool.
That's...
I didn't know they were the thing.
I couldn't picture them together, but yeah.
No, and I can't picture him as a heartbreaker. I feel like if he dumped me, I'd be like, okay.
I'm kind of feeling like she might have been a bit batshit crazy and he had to go.
Right. Well, she was saying that to her, that song, people associate it with anger, but really she was very sad at that time.
Right.
And that it's easier to feel anger than it is sadness. And so when she said that, that's what made me type that out of, I'm sure that's the way a lot of people feel, right? When somebody cheats on you, hurts you, talks about you, it's easier to be mad at somebody than to admit that it's gotten to you and you're saddened by it.
So I think grief has got its own process.
Yeah.
Like for me, when something like that would happen, I, of course, initially it's anger, mm-hmm. right? Because you've been lied to, you've lost the trust, a betrayal has happened. And then normally right. for me after that, the sadness comes in. But that song, yeah, I associate that with anger, and that could be in the way that she performs the song, right?
I mean,
it sounds like a jealous ex-girlfriend. Do you think of me when you fuck her, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an angry statement.
Yeah, or is it a sad statement of like, like for me, if my husband was to find someone new, I would think like, you know, when you're kissing her or hugging her, are you thinking of me or have you moved on? Like the things that we've done together, are you now sharing those experiences and are you thinking of me?
Right. But kissing and loving are very romantic words. Fucking is a very negative, harsh
yeah,
word.
I like it because it stings.
Right. But that's why people associate this song yeah. with anger and not sadness, because mm-hmm. it's angry.
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I like that. I'm going to finish watching and see what she says about each song and where she was there. I was watching a movie called Lovebirds. It's a comedy on Netflix. And the couple is, they have this great relationship, they're dating, and then they come to a point where she feels and he feels like their relationship is stale. They're sitting on the couch with each other, both looking at their cell phones rather than talking to each other. And she's looking at these new couples that are talking and engaging and all this stuff. And at the very end, when they realize that they should be together, she says that she realized that the couple sitting there not talking maybe weren't miserable, but were content, that they were able to find contentness in mm-hmm. in the quiet between the two of them, you know, like, and it really made me think of some of the things I complain about my husband about. Like sometimes we're in the car and I'm just listening to music and we're not talking for a good 20 minutes, where then, you know, you can say, well, look at us, we're not even talking. Or maybe are we just so content with one another that we don't have to fill that space with noise?
Right. And I would agree that it's contentness.
What a beautiful thought, rather than feeling negative about your relationship.
Well, I think when you feel negative about the silence in your relationship, there's something else going on. You're not content in your relationship. There's an issue. There's underlying something that needs to be addressed, because otherwise both parties would be content in the extensive silence.
So, no, I don't agree with that. So, I mean, I'll say that I'm always looking to improve my relationship in some way. And it is interesting having friends that are in new relationships. Uh-huh. And so you see, like, we'll just say Jen, for example, she's got a new man that is officially her boyfriend. And sometimes I look at them and I'm like, man, look at them. They're laughing and they're chit-chatting and they're doing all this. And then when I heard this line, I was like, you know, well, Nate and I've been together for 16 years and our lives are hectic and there's things going on. And I should just look at that 20 minutes of silence of the fact that we're just so comfortable mm-hmm. that we no longer have to do that. There's no insecurity over here I always worry that things will be stale and that we make sure that we're still moving forward. And I'm always checking his temperature and my temperature. Are you happy? Am I happy? What can I do better? What can you do better? Doesn't mean that I'm insecure.
No, I think you misunderstood me. Okay. I was saying that the silence and being comfortable in your silence is a sign of a good relationship. Not of a bad one.
Right. But I thought you were saying, like, questioning that feeling makes somebody insecure in their relationship.
No, I feel like if you are a person that there can't be any silence and there's always got to be something going on and you're in a long-term relationship, mm-hmm. something could be missing fundamentally right. from your relationship that's got you insecure, which is why you're trying to fill the void.
Right.
But I'm saying, like, for you and Nate and, like, for me and Dion, we've been together so long that, and our lives are so hectic, but we know we love each other. We've had all these experiences, and when we sit down and there's just quiet. We can just kind of look at each other and go, yep, I love you too. I love you. That's great. And we're comfortable and we're happy in the right. quietness.
Right. Yeah. I like that way of thinking. And this is kind of the way my mind works. Like, this is just a comedy movie that whenever I just hear, like, one line somewhere that I feel like is a bar or hits, I stick it in my phone. So here's one more and then we'll be done.
Okay.
So this was based on a conversation. Well, there's two more, which I think you might. Do you know why I would have put 9-pound hammer?
You're not allowed to discuss that on air.
Okay.
I know exactly what that is, and you're not allowed to discuss that on air.
I have no idea what that meant.
Okay.
Then two lines down. Well, the next one is King John III, which is somebody I need to look into because there's a conspiracy theory that your husband told me about.
Yep.
Then the next line is, maybe the mental disorders are the evil spirits. So I was having a conversation with someone about mental disorder and whether or not, kind of nature versus nurture. Where does it come from? Do we believe in spirits? Do we believe that your life has an order and no matter what that outcome is, it's going to be, you can hit all these obstacle courses and try to derail yourself, but your outcome is always the same? Or do we have the power to change our path? And at one point I said, something about mental health, and his comeback was, well, maybe mental health is an evil spirit. Like, if we're not going, if you don't believe in religion and good versus bad, maybe mental disorders is an evil spirit of some sort. And then I was like, ooh, fuck, I never thought of it like that.
But if it's if mental disorder is an evil spirit, wouldn't you have to believe in some form of religion? Because all I can think about is now The Exorcist.
Like, well, that's what we were talking about, is that he had said that he knew somebody who had been exorcised, and I was like, oh, okay.
And how did that, like, work out?
Right. And he said that it worked out just fine. And then I said, well, do you think that they were curing a mental disorder? Or do you think that she was actually taken over by an evil spirit, or that they were trying to correct a mental disorder, schizophrenia or something like that? And his question back to me was, well, what if schizophrenia or a mental disorder like that is an evil spirit? And I was like, huh.
Well, if that's the case, then why haven't they tried to exorcise more schizophrenics?
Well, what he was saying is that there's churches that do.
Really?
Like this, yeah, this was a church. This guy is younger than me and grew up in the 90s.
Okay.
And went to a church that did perform exorcists.
We sure on people. It's a church, not a cult?
I know, that's what I said. Because I was like, all right, tell me a little more about your church. Because I'm pretty sure you were a member of a cult.
Children to this?
A teenager.
Exactly. Still.
A teenager. But I do like the thought of, I like thinking about things from different sides of, okay, right. Well, maybe is mental health an evil spirit? Now, I'm not religious, so I have a hard time supporting that. But if people in religion don't believe in therapy and medical
assistance and all this other stuff, but they believe that you can pray your way out of it or exorcist your way out of it or exercise. What's the proper term for that?
Exorcist.
Exorcist somebody into sanity. Is it not possible?
I have no idea, because my belief is that an evil spirit is its own being, right? It would not, it would overtake your body, right? But not that it would be the disorder.
Right.
Like, you can have a mental disorder and not be taken by an evil spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
because of the neurons and the chemical imbalances in your brain. And, you know, that could be the physical side of the description of what it is. But I don't, I always understand spiritual beings to be their own entity.
Okay. Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
It's its own entity. It was a person at one point in time and has died and hasn't actually, you know, solved what it was supposed to do, or it suffered an extreme torture death, and it is now haunting areas, why you have ghosts and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I don't, now I know I've heard of spirits that follow families, mm-hmm. right? Like, no matter where they move, the spirit moves with them, and it can be good or bad, but it actually causing a disease in somebody, that I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was an interesting argument against my belief in mental health versus religion or something like that. I really, you know, believe in therapy and all those things. And his argument to that was, well, maybe the drugs to cure schizophrenia and things like that are just a Band-Aid, and that spirit is still within you until maybe you find your way to church and you're able to, which I was like, hey, you know, it's an interesting argument. I'm going to write that down.
It is. And what my counteractive would be, that then thus you are born as an evil spirit yourself. Your core soul is evil, right?
Yeah.
Because evil spirits are their own beings. You came out evil that appeared in this disease. And if you think that the religion is going to take it out, you would thus have to die. And if you're not dying, then I've heard where spirits can subdue themselves and then come back out when they want to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But
true.
But you as a person would be consumed by your own evil spirit.
Right. Yeah. Crazy conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like, but this is what happens. This is how, like, I do it when you and I are talking too, where I'll be like, ooh, I'm going to write this down when we're having our conversations at the farm and all this other stuff. So I'm going to read this last one. It's kind of long. I wrote this on April 15th, around lunchtime. So, what's that? About 6 weeks into quarantine. And everybody that is listening, you guys know that I watch a lot of TV and movies. And so I had just finished watching, the Ninja Turtles series in the movies 1, 2, and 3.
Oh my God.
So this is what I wrote. Sometimes I wonder if this is real life. Has the entire world somehow frozen in time, but still found a way to keep moving? Did I pray this into reality? Did our human needs to slow down will this upon us? Are we seeing this as a curse instead of a blessing? I dream about my clients. How are they doing? Are they thinking of me as much as I'm thinking of them and the people that I see on a daily basis? The gas station cashier, whatever. Reminds me of a moment in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when April O'Neil is journaling about the turtles during their confinement. So this is during movie number one, if you have not watched it. So many unsures if Splinter is alive, if Raphael will make it through. Would Casey Jones get the old truck to start? Could the ninja practice enough to defend, or could the team practice enough to defend against the Shredder? My family, like the turtles, are secluded and dealing with this time in their own way. My husband practices his hockey skill, waiting for his time to beat his version of the Shredder. Mm-hmm. Lorelai is striving the best, being the best student in her innermost laid back as possible. My son finds refuge in his video game, so once social child, now celebrates these interactions with friends. Late nights, other courts are now replaced with virtual
competitions. I deal with it like I do everything else in my life. Forever the injured, stubborn Raphael, I take the hits as they come, smile, and push through. I play the roles I'm assigned and stay on the constant edge of tears. And then that's where I just left it.
Wow, that was really deep coming from the teenage turtles.
Well, they didn't know if their little rat friend was dead or not. And there was so much going on in that moment.
Wait, I thought the rat guy was the bad guy.
No, the Shredder is the bad guy. Splinter is their mentor. And so at this moment in the movie, Splinter's been kidnapped. Raphael, or one of them, is super injured. Casey is working. So they're all kind of like dealing with it in a separate way. And for some reason on April 15th, I'm sitting here in my office and then just have this moment of, well, we're very similar to the Ninja Turtles in this moment.
God, we are. It's true.
So those are straight from the notes section in Sabrina's iPhones. All those sentences, all those topics. There's hundreds of them over the years.
Oh, I bet there is. You write down some.
I mean, that only goes back a few months.
Wow. I can't imagine what you wrote like 3 years ago.
It goes back to 2014.
Wow.
Here, I'll just read 2014. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desire. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it.
There you go.
Leave it there. Yeah.
There you go. Perfect way to end the show.
That's right. So, all right. Well, that was fun.
It was. I had a blast.
So have a happy 4th.
Yes.
And we'll be back at it next week.
Yes, we will. So as always, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Have a great day, you guys.
Bye.